Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. The Yee here. This is Law for Virginia Law Enforcement Officers. And this is episode 95. And today, we're going to be talking about ECO and TDO law. Just the basic fundamentals of it. What is the law regarding ECOs and TDOs? We talked in episode 88 about the whole shall versus may thing and how is it that people get away with basically not doing their job in the system and so on. And, you know, in that, I touched on a lot of the shalls regarding other agencies, but we didn't really talk about law enforcement responsibilities regarding ECOs and TDOs. And, you know, a couple of times in the last year or so, I've had officers, you know, ask me about a situation that came up, you know, one or another situation where, you know, they followed the law, they followed what the law said, and it resulted in a dispute about whether or not somebody should have been ECO'd or not. And that dispute really came down to, you know, what does the statute require? And so I thought it'd be worth it for today for us to kind of just go through the basics of what the statute requires. And then in a future episode, I'm going to talk a little bit more. I'd like to talk a little bit more about, you know, what is probable cause for an ECO and TDO and what are the standards and so on. But for today, I just kind of want to go through what the statute requires because I think it's something that we don't often spend time talking about and it's important. So what we're going to do is we're just going to walk through the basic legal process for ECOs and TDOs in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And the one thing I want to start out with when we talk about ECO law and TDO law is it's very different than the law regarding search and seizure. You know, you guys, if you've stuck around this far in the podcast, you know, I've got, you know, what, 95 episodes now. And we haven't even begun to touch on lots of different really significant exceptions to the warrant requirement, aspects of search warrants, serving search warrants. We've kind of hit a bunch of different interesting topics, but, you know, we could probably go 200 or 250 episodes and still not cover all of the subjects about which there is a ton of law in the Fourth Amendment. And that includes use of force, right? So there's a lot of different issues in use of force and a lot of different rulings and doctrines and ideas. And then we come to this area of ECO and TDO law. And the law about this, as it turns out, is pretty limited. We don't really have a lot of court rulings to give us guidance about, you know, what is probable cause for an ECO? What is probable cause for a TDO? What is an appropriate amount of force to use when serving an ECO or TDO? We're going to, you know, come to this in a little bit, but, you know, spoiler alert in this, a lot of people have asked me in recent years, if I have a TDO, if I have, or an ECO, I have an order issued by a magistrate to take someone into custody for either an evaluation or for temporary detention, is that order legally sufficient to kick in the door of their house and take them into custody? And I wish I could point to a case that said, yes, it is. If not that, at least I could point to a case that said, no, it isn't. But what we have, and I've spent a lot of time trying to track this down, is no real case that says one way or the other, whether like an arrest warrant, an ECO would be lawful authority to kick in the door on somebody's house and take them into custody. I think there's a logical argument to be made that it is, and there's no doubt, you know, that it makes sense, right? You have a judicial order to take someone into custody, and presumably the ECO has got the person's address on it, and when you go there, they answer the door, or they, you know, say they're in there. So you have both a warrant for their arrest, for their being taken into custody, and you have a reason to believe they're inside, probable cause to believe they're inside. So, you know, in theory, there's no reason why an ECO or a TDO wouldn't be lawful authority to enter someone's property and take them into custody. But we just don't have a case that says that. I've never seen a case that says that. And so the Fourth Circuit, in a case called Gooden, which is, you know, 30 years ago, but wrote, the lack of clarity in the law governing seizures for psychological evaluations is striking when compared to the standards detailed in other Fourth Amendment contexts, where probable cause to suspect criminal misconduct has been painstakingly defined. And it really hasn't changed very much. We've had a bunch of rulings on use of force recently, but not a lot, you know, on probable cause for ECOs and TDOs and authority and so on. So, but we're left with kind of what the statute says. So I think it's worth talking about what the statute says in a little bit of detail if we're going to figure out what all this stuff means. And so we start with the language of 37.2. Now, you're maybe accustomed to finding your law in 18.2 or 19.2 or 46.2. Those are the criminal and traffic, the criminal law, the criminal procedure code, and the traffic code. 37.2 is where we're going to find our law regarding ECOs and TDOs. And to start with, just like with, you know, having probable cause to take someone into custody for a criminal offense and arresting them, you have the authority as a law enforcement officer to take someone into custody for a paperless ECO, emergency custody order. That is to say, you encounter them in the street and you could take them into custody without any kind of legal process, without any legal paper. And that code section that allows you to do that is 37.2808, subsection G, which allows a law enforcement officer, based on their own observations or the reports of others, can take a person into custody and transport them for an evaluation if they have probable cause to believe that person meets the commitment criteria. And throughout these code sections today, we're going to be repeating this word, probable cause. The standard here is probable cause. And I want to emphasize, as I always do, that probable cause does not mean more likely than not. It simply means a fair probability. It would be reasonable to conclude that a person meets the commitment criteria. It does not require a showing of more true than false. And so that's the first thing I think it's always important to remember here when talking about probable cause. The second thing here to note is that what you can use to establish probable cause or to reach probable cause includes your own observations or the reports of others. So you don't have to rely on your own observations in order to reach a probable cause standard. You could simply interview a bunch of people and they could all tell you, oh yeah, my brother Dave is trying to kill himself and he thinks he's, you know, his brain is being eaten by spiders and he thinks that if he doesn't kill himself that the planet will explode and whatever, whatever, you know. And then you say, have you tried to get him help? Yeah, he's refused to get help. He has mental disease and he was diagnosed and he's on medication, but he's refusing to take his medication, you know, typical kind of story. You could, based on the reports of others, without your own observations, reach a conclusion of probable cause. The statute at least allows for that. So what is it that you have to have probable cause of? Well, that's again defined in 37.2808 section G. And that is that you have probable cause that the individual has a mental illness and that there's a substantial likelihood that as a result of that mental illness, the person will in the near future cause serious physical harm to themselves or others. And that would be evidenced by recent behavior causing, attempting, or threatening harm and other relevant information, if any, or that the person will suffer serious physical harm due to their lack of capacity to protect themselves from harm or to provide for their basic human needs. In addition to that, you have to have probable cause the person's in need of hospitalization or treatment, which kind of is part and parcel of the previous one. And lastly, and this is important because we leave this out a lot, you have to have probable cause the person's unwilling to volunteer or incapable of volunteering for hospitalization or treatment. Okay, so let's break this down, right? One is it has to be a mental illness, right? If we're ECOing somebody, it's got to be for a mental illness, at least under this particular code section. There's medical ECOs and medical TDOs and intoxication TDOs. Today, we're just talking about the mental illness TDOs. So you have to have probable cause a person's got a mental illness, and there's a substantial likelihood that as a result, they're going to cause harm to themselves or cause harm to others, or they're going to suffer harm due to they can't take care of themselves, right? And you might have that as well. They're not going to physically hurt themselves, but they're going to be harmed due to a lack of care. And they have to need hospitalization. And again, they have to be unwilling to volunteer or incapable of volunteering. So if you don't have all three, right? If you don't have all three of these categories, the person needs hospitalization, they're unwilling to get treatment, but it's not as a result of mental illness. That's a result of something else. Right, then okay, then we have to go for something else. We have to go for a different code section. They might have a mental illness. They might be a danger to themselves or others. They might need treatment, but they might also be willing to volunteer or capable of volunteering. And so they're like, look, yeah, I know I need help and I will go in the ambulance. I will go. Well, if you're willing to go in the ambulance, then under the statute, an officer doesn't have the authority, doesn't have probable cause to take that person into custody against their will and force them into treatment. And so this comes from the Fourth Amendment standard. And the Fourth Amendment standard is that law enforcement officers must have probable cause to believe that an individual poses a danger to themselves or others before involuntarily detaining them. So even before we get through what the statute says, it's important to note that the Constitution requires that you have probable cause to believe a person is a danger to themselves or others before taking them into custody. Now, again, we have statutes that implement this, and we also have medical TDOs and intoxication TDOs and so on. Today we're just talking about ECOs, but again, that core is they got to be a danger to themselves or others to have their liberty taken away. So after you've taken someone into custody on a paperless ECO, then the next question is, what do you have to do? Well, here the code tells us pretty clearly that you must take that person into custody and transport them to an appropriate location to assess the need for hospitalization or treatment. And once you do that, what's interesting is your law enforcement authority suddenly, your jurisdiction suddenly expands. And now you can go beyond your territorial limits of your city, county, or town to anywhere in the Commonwealth for the purposes of obtaining that assessment. And, we've gone to places on the other side of the state before, you know, maybe 6, 7, 8 hour drive. But you are a law enforcement officer during that entire transport. And the evaluation has to be conducted immediately under the code. Now, it says it shall be conducted immediately. You can go back to episode 88 to find out how much remedy you would have if it wasn't conducted immediately. And the answer is not very much. But the code is clear that the period of custody shall not exceed 8 hours from the time the law enforcement officer takes the person into custody. So regardless of how long the evaluation takes, the 8 hours starts the moment that you take that person into custody. So you do want to be careful about noting that and about taking someone into custody getting somebody evaluated for treatment as soon as possible. Now, you can take somebody into custody on a paperless ECO, but if you have ever taken a class with me before, you know that I start and end and throughout the entire class repeat that it is always better to have a warrant. It is always better to have legal process in hand. If it can be done, and it can't always be done, but if it can be done, you always want to have a piece of paper in hand because it is presumed to be lawful, and actions without a warrant are presumed to be unlawful. And so 37.2808 also provides authority for the issuance of an ECO by a magistrate. And so you could rely on a magistrate's ECO, and that would give you a lot more legal cover. And so an emergency custody order issued by a magistrate would require any person in that magistrate's judicial district who is incapable of volunteering or unwilling to volunteer for treatment to be taken into custody and transported for an evaluation in order to assess the need for hospitalization or treatment. So here again, you're ECOing somebody. The standard is going to be the same. So in other words, you can, to start with, the magistrate can find probable cause on the sworn petition of any responsible person, or indeed on the magistrate's own motion. So just like a police officer, they can act based on their own observations or on information provided by other people. They do not have to verify it with their own eyes. They can rely on others, but they can also act simply on what they see themselves and issue an ECO based on that as well. The criteria for a magistrate-issued ECO is that there be probable cause to believe that a person meets the criteria of having a mental illness and a substantial likelihood that the person will, in the near future, cause serious physical harm to themselves or others, as evidenced by recent behavior causing, attempting, or threatening harm and other relevant information, or suffering serious harm due to the lack of capacity to protect themselves from harm or provide for their basic human needs. So notice here, and this is interesting, I think, that the magistrate-issued ECO doesn't have that third requirement that the person is unwilling to or incapable of seeking treatment on their own, or unwilling to volunteer for treatment on their own. And this is likely because the way the statute is written, it's assumed that the person is not present when the ECO is being issued. So the magistrate doesn't have to make a finding about whether they're willing to go or not on their own. So in that way, a paperless ECO is more strict because a paperless ECO requires the officer to make a conclusion the person is not willing to get treatment on their own or not capable of volunteering on their own, whereas the magistrate doesn't have to do that to issue an ECO. And the statute lays out what a magistrate can consider when they're doing their probable cause hearing, and they can obviously follow recommendations of a treating or examining physician or psychologist. They can also look at the person's past history, their past mental health treatment, relevant hearsay, medical records, affidavits from witnesses, if witnesses are unavailable and the affidavit states that they're unavailable, or, and the statute has a sort of catch-all at the end, any other relevant information. So basically, the magistrate can consider anything, any information at all. Now, what's difficult about a magistrate issued ECO is that law enforcement has 8 hours to execute that ECO from the time that it's issued. And, you know, this is, the magistrate may sign that ECO. It may be a while before you can even get to the person. You have 8 hours to execute that ECO. So once it's issued, you got to track that person down, find them, get them in custody. And if they're barricaded or something, you know, your time is running. And then, once you execute it, just like with a paperless ECO, you have another 8 hours. It's valid for a period not to exceed another 8 hours from the time of execution. So, you know, notice here the magic number is 8. And interesting here, actually, that our episode 88 was the episode we talked about ECOs last. The code section used to be 4 hours and used to be able to get extensions, but they removed all that. And so nowadays it's just 8. So it's 8 for paperless and it's 8 for papered. You have 8 hours to serve it. And then once you serve it, you have 8 hours to continue to hold that person. So if an ECO is issued by a magistrate or a court or a judge, for example, who can also do it, then they are supposed to specify the primary law enforcement agency and jurisdiction to execute the ECO and provide transportation, although they are permitted nowadays to use alternative transportation if it's available. And again, if you're assessing or executing the ECO, you can leave your jurisdiction to go to another jurisdiction if you've got somebody in custody and you're taking them to serve the ECO, so just like a paperless ECO. But again, the primary law enforcement agency is supposed to be designated to execute the ECO. So who is the primary law enforcement agency? Well, here the code lays it out. If the Community Service Board serves more than one jurisdiction, then the magistrate or court shall designate the primary law enforcement agency from the particular jurisdiction within the Community Service Board's area where the person who is the subject of the ECO was taken into custody, if they're already taken into custody, or if they haven't yet been taken into custody, then it's the primary law enforcement agency from the jurisdiction where the person is currently located. So kind of makes sense to execute the order and provide transportation. So it makes sense. If the person is located in the city of Fairfax, then you designate City of Fairfax Police Department. By the way, you can do an MOU if you want to do an MOU to transfer your authority to another law enforcement agency in that area if they've entered into an MOU setting the terms and conditions where it's going to accept transfers of custody, right? And this is going to be especially where jurisdictions overlap or you have a sheriff's department and a police department or a town police and a county police and so on. Now, we've talked about ECOs here. What about TDOs? Well, a temporary detention order, right? That's a little different than an ECO. It's an order issued by a magistrate that authorizes law enforcement to take a person into custody and transport them to a facility designated in the order. So very similar to an ECO. And here again, this is going to be a piece of paper issued by a magistrate or by a judge. You couldn't do a paperless TDO. TDOs usually follow an ECO. And so the code section for TDOs is 37.2809. And TDOs, it specifies, can be issued on the sworn petition of any responsible person or, again, the magistrate's own motion, but only after an in-person evaluation by the Community Service Board's employee or designee. So in other words, a TDO has to follow an ECO in most situations, right? There has to be some kind of evaluation by the Community Service Board. You could, I guess, have a TDO without having an ECO if the person voluntarily went to the Community Service Board. And also under 809D, a TDO can be issued without an ECO evaluation if that person has been examined within the previous 72 hours by the Community Service Board, or if there is significant physical, psychological, or medical risk to the person associated with conducting the evaluation. So obviously there are situations where you might have a TDO issued without having an ECO issued first, but that's not going to be the normal situation. And we talked about this in episode 88. Once that TDO is issued, now that person might be going to some other place based on who the state designates, right? The Community Service Board is supposed to contact the state facility for the area in which the CSB is located and notify the state facility the person is going to be transported on the issuance of a TDO. And they're supposed to, you know, go to that state facility if no other facility of temporary detention can be identified by the time that ECO expires at the end of that 8 hours. Now, the state is allowed to conduct a search for an alternative facility that is able and willing to provide temporary detention and appropriate care to the individual. And that can include other state facilities, right? So if Eastern State is your jurisdiction, is your hospital, but Western State has a bed available and Eastern State doesn't, then, you know, Eastern State could refer you off to Western State, and that's okay. But in no circumstances under the code, it's very clear, under no circumstances shall a state's facility fail or refuse to admit an individual who meets the criteria for TDO unless an alternative facility that is able to provide temporary detention and appropriate care agrees to accept the individual for temporary detention. Now, I know at this point somebody is screaming, my state facility did refuse to admit an individual. Well, I'm just telling you what the code says, and if you don't like what I just said, I encourage you to check out episode 88 for a discussion about what might be going on there. But in any event, that's what the code says. And the one thing that you are governed by is that the individual who is being TDO'd shall not, during the duration of the temporary detention order, be released from custody except for purposes of transporting them, obviously, to the facility. In other words, if you found an alternative transportation provider, sure, then you could release the person from custody to the alternative transportation provider, but otherwise you're not supposed to release them. And you know, at this point, it's worth noting, and we could talk about this in a whole other episode, you do face some liability here because the person now is in your care. You've taken their liberty away. You've taken them into your custody. And so while normally law enforcement doesn't have an affirmative responsibility to keep a random, you know, average member of the public safe, once you have taken custody of somebody, now you are absolutely responsible for their safety. And so just, you know, releasing somebody who's a danger to themselves or others just in the middle of the street, while you have a TDO order in place that says you're supposed to transfer them to a safe facility, but, you know, you got tired of waiting for the bed to be available, so you said, forget it, kid, get out of the car. You may have yourself a problem because you have a TDO that says you're supposed to transport them and you're not doing it. So you'd face some liability. So you do need to make sure that you do follow that TDO if you've taken that person into custody and you're in the middle of transport. They are in your custody and you should continue that, as frustrating as it might be. The CSB, though, can change the location. An employee or designee of the local CSB can change the facility of temporary detention and may designate an alternative facility for temporary detention at any point during the period of temporary detention if it's determined that an alternative facility is a more appropriate facility for temporary detention given their security, medical, or behavioral health needs. Now, if the facility of temporary detention can't be identified by the time of the expiration of the ECO, that little 8-hour period, then the code, again, though, is clear. The person shall be detained in a state facility for the treatment of persons with mental illness, and that facility shall be indicated on the temporary detention order. So that's what's supposed to happen. Now, if the person's already an inmate, then in a jail or the place of confinement, then they cannot be continued to be held in the jail or other place of confinement if they are being TDO'd. So in other words, If you've got somebody who's already in jail and there's a TDO issued for them, you can't just leave them in jail. You have to move them. You can't leave them with other inmates. Now, in the meantime, while you're waiting, and this is going back to my previous comment, the person shall remain in the custody of the law enforcement until the person is either detained within a secure facility or custody has been accepted by the appropriate personnel designated either by the initial facility of temporary detention identified in the temporary detention order, or if you've been sent to an alternative facility, the alternative facility of temporary detention designated by the CSB in this case. So again, the code is clear. They're your responsibility and you have to continue to hold them until such time as they are accepted or, you know, either get into the secured facility or their custody is accepted. So who transports for TDOs? We talked about who transports for ECOs, but here TDOs are a little bit different. Here, the magistrate, and this is provided in 37.2.8.10, the magistrate shall specify in the TDO the law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which the person resides. So notice that might be, that's different than the ECO, right? Because the ECO is where the person is going to be located, right? But here it's the jurisdiction where the person resides. Or any other willing law enforcement agency that has agreed to provide transportation to execute the order and provide transportation. However, the code provides that if the nearest boundary of the jurisdiction in which the person resides is more than 50 miles from the nearest boundary of the jurisdiction where the person is located, then the law enforcement agency of the jurisdiction in which the person is located shall execute the order and provide transportation. Okay, so in other words, right, let's go back to the question here of who transports, right? So as we talked about earlier on, when we talked about 37.2.808, which talks about the primary law enforcement agency is who does the ECO. That is the agency where, from the jurisdiction where the person is located. So again, my guy is in Fairfax City. So Fairfax City Police Department is the agency that's going to take that person into custody on the ECO. But let's say that the person they took into custody while they were in Fairfax City at a bar or whatever causing trouble, they actually live in Loudoun County. So they've been ECO'd and they were taken to, let's say, Northern Virginia Mental Health. So there they are in Northern Virginia Mental Health. Well, they live in Loudoun County. So there it's going to be the Loudoun County Sheriff's Department, because that's the jurisdiction where the person resides, that has to go pick the person up from Northern Virginia Mental Health and transport them to wherever the location of the TDO is. Now, to switch it up a little bit, let's say it's Fairfax City Police that took them into custody of the ECO and they were located in Fairfax City, but the person resides in Virginia Beach. Well, does Virginia Beach Sheriff, you know, Police Department have to come all the way up to Northern Virginia Mental Health? No, they're more than 50 miles away. And so there, it's the jurisdiction in which the person is located that shall execute and provide transportation. So, you know, tough for the jurisdiction where they're, you know, if that's located where Northern Virginia Mental Health is located, which I actually don't know. Is that Fairfax or no? Or is that, I'm not sure. I don't know. But Virginia Beach doesn't have to drive up and deal with that, right? It's where the person is located. They're the ones who have to do the transportation. Here again, right, they can always use alternative transportation providers. And there, the code has been really, the General Assembly has been really pushing to encourage alternative transportation. So hopefully that'll start happening more often. We'll see. In addition to that, by the way, it was added to the code that you can also use auxiliary police officers to provide transportation. And DCJS is supposed to be coming up with compulsory minimum training standards for auxiliary police officers who are called into service for doing TDO transports. So, you know, sheriff's departments can use reserve deputies, and that's a nice advantage. Police departments didn't really have that as much, but here they could use auxiliary police officers. That was a change from last year's General Assembly from 2022. And a TDO has to be executed within 24 hours. If a temporary detention order is not executed within 24 hours or within a shorter period as is specified in the order becomes void and it shall be returned unexecuted to the office of the clerk of the issuing court, or if the office isn't open, to any magistrate serving the jurisdiction of the court. The magistrate, though, could issue another TDO after that. Subsequent orders can be issued upon the original petition, based on the original petition, within 96 hours after the petition is filed. However, a magistrate has to obtain the advice of an employee or designee of the CSB prior to issuing a subsequent order based on the original petition. So that's not an automatic thing. They do have to go back and talk to the CSB again. So here today, we just did sort of a really quick overview of what the law is regarding ECO and TDO legal process. It was kind of basic, but I hope maybe you learned something, or you reviewed something, or you maybe got an answer to a question that you might have had. I do want to talk more about ECO and TDO law, and I will do a future episode on probable cause for ECOs and TDOs. I think that's interesting. And then obviously, you know, use of force and so on is an issue as well, but that's for another day. For today, that's all from me. That's all from Big E. Stay safe and don't get captured.